welcome back to the Coaches Rising podcast. Today I'm joined by Locke Kelly. This has been way overdue. Locke's work's had a real impact on me, on my journey. And so today we're going to be talking about the very powerful approach that Locke has to waking up, particularly his glimpse practices, which are a very quick, potent way to experience what they call in Tibetan Buddhism awake awareness, which is a very key experience to have. In a sense, it's our natural state, which is often covered over. So we'll talk about glimpse practices. We'll talk about what awakening is in Locke's view and how his view of awakening has matured over the years. We'll talk about spiritual bypassing, working with difficult emotions, the importance of embodiment on the path. We'll talk about the three levels of emptiness. Emptiness is something I've had a real love-hate relationship with. And we'll explore why, and why there is particularly there's certain dead ends or paths we can head down, which are not so, I don't think so, fruitful for people. So it's a very, very rich conversation. We'll also get into why Locke works with internal family systems, and he's such a big advocate for that approach in the work he does with his clients and community. Locke is the author of two fantastic books. Shift into Freedom had a huge impact on me when it first came out. And also more recently, he came out with The Way of Effortless Mindfulness. And he's also created an app where you can access his glimpse meditations. If you're interested in finding out more about Coaches Rising, you can head to coachesrising.com and find out more about the different acclaimed offerings we have for transformational coaches. That all being said, let's dive right in. Here's the podcast with Locke Kelly. I don't have to tell you that these are turbulent times. They're astonishing times. Many people are feeling deeply challenged, more reactive, and my sense is in more need of coaching than ever. And while these times are full of challenges, they're also ripe with evolutionary potential. This is the gift of these times. And I think it's these moments that coaches are built for, so we can help our clients unlock the deeper capacities and intelligence that's required of them now. And that's exactly what our newest program, Unlocking Leaders, is all about. You'll learn how to work at the source code of change, beyond strategy, beyond protocol, at the level of consciousness itself. This, for me, has been by far the biggest leverage I have with my clients. Is the most potent move I can make, because the level of consciousness a leader is operating from determines everything. What they notice, what they miss, whether they react defensively, stay grounded, whether they tighten in control or open into creativity and collaborativity, and ultimately what becomes possible in how they lead. And when you work at this level, you'll be able to tap into these hidden drivers behind decisions and behaviors and unlock possibilities in situations that once felt stuck. And beyond that, importantly, you're going to cultivate a capacity that AI will never possess. As AI expands and begins to dominate procedural and operational coaching, as it grows, it's becoming clearer what it cannot do, and it can't feel, it can't connect in the same way when two human beings come together and the field that they create becomes part of the transformational conversation. It can't work with consciousness, the very source of transformation and the source of the most powerful coaching moves. This is what separates good coaches from great coaches working at this level. And AI can't touch this. So if you're interested to find out more about this program, if you feel called to join us, then head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. The first class is June 16th with Jim Dethmer, just an incredible, masterful coach. And he's joined by Bob Anderson, also a true pioneer in the field of conscious leadership and coaching. And if you sign up by May 29th, you can get the early bird discount. Enrollment is open until June 12th. So head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. So Locke, we've just been checking in a little bit before we hit the record button, and I'm really thrilled to be speaking with you now, actually. I want to ask you how you are in a moment, but I just want to share This is why I love doing this podcast, because I just get to be in conversation with people who, where I can explore these things that are really important to me. So how are you, first of all?
Yeah. Hey, Joel. Yeah, so great to be here and see you again after we met many years ago in Netherlands. I'm doing well. I'm doing great. Really happy to be here and looking forward to dialoguing with you.
Yeah, me too. So we're gonna talk about your work in a sense around awakening and what you mean by that and the way that you support people to go through that journey. You're going to be teaching as well in our program Symphony of Self, which is all about working with parts and awakening. So and I think you've just brought something really unique into the world, which is just very effective. So maybe I could just ask you to begin by sharing, because this awakening is such a broad term and there are different views on what that means. I think we're going to get into that. What's your take on, what is your work about, really? What's the aim of it? In a nutshell.
It's a great, great broad question. It allows me to start anywhere and stumble along here. Yeah. So, I do feel, feeling that I kind of just somehow was able to find my way to these natural openings early on in childhood that I didn't even realize what they were, but I thought they were just kind of normal ways of seeing as I look back. But I'll say that, awakening is living a fully human life. So it's not about sitting on a cushion or joining a monastery or becoming an Olympic athlete of meditation or living in a cave. That it is awakening to me is the next natural stage of human development. So it's an upgrading of our way of knowing, our upgrading our identity, our sense of who are we, and upgrading our relating and creating. So in the world. So it's the amazing thing is that I was able to find early on this kind of direct path teaching called Mahamudra and somewhat of a Dzogchen in Tibetan Buddhism. But the Mahamudra is this pre-Tibetan fullness of awakening. And I've combined it with my training as a psychotherapist. So I use IFS and then also flow research or flow consciousness, so that the ultimate goal or pointer is to live from awake, loving flow. And this is kind of uncovering our natural, already installed consciousness that people call higher self or true nature or essential self or with a capital S or Thich Nhat Hanh calls it interbeing, which is, I think, beautiful. So this nature is already here, and it's if we're not able to discover it, we're just bumbling along kind of in this cloud of thoughts, feelings, sensations, head, heart, gut, of heart meaning emotions, head, gut, trying to clean up the cloud of our battery of this body and mind and feeling separate. And once we open, either by going subtler or wider, and discover that outside and within the cloud is this subtler dimension of what's called nature of mind, which is an awareness-based knowing. So what do you call that? Awake awareness, or it's called Rigpa. In Tibetan Buddhism, it's called Turiya. And then Turiyatitta in Hinduism, or true nature, whatever that word is, it's the experience of this clear, alert presence that then is the primary dimension and arises as thoughts, feelings, sensations, our body, and the world. That's the feeling of it. So you're awakening from this small separate sense of self, this ego-centeredness or this self-centeredness or this I think, therefore I am identity. That the curious thing is that we can do pretty well within that system. So we're all like struggling along and doing pretty well in our lives with kind of a level of trauma and suffering underneath it all, and a striving of different parts that are polarized against each other, trying harder, not doing it, achieving, work harder, get, what about this? Oh my God, shame-based, judgment-based parts are coming up, and we're calling them me, or as if they're parts of me, and we're trying to just kind of move pieces on this chessboard or clean up this cloud. Once we clean up one section, then the other section gets messy again, as you may have noticed. So discovering this already awake, awareness-based, alert knowing that arises as sensation, vibration, feeling, thought, your body, and the world, and that becomes what's called self-essence or awake awareness, that then becomes self-aware or awake consciousness, bodhicitta, it's called, that is the heart mind, has a sense of the fabric of love as its primary sense of safety and well-being, that then when parts of us that are exiled or shadow parts arise that have either complex trauma or severe trauma or just everyday trauma, which we all have, we can be with them from this new sense of mind and this new felt sense of who everything's arising to. So it's not so much about controlling what's arising or trying to make that be happy, but finding that which is already happy for no reason, that can be with whatever arises.
Yeah, there's so much in what you just shared that I want to kind of unpack where to start. So I think one thing that why I'm so glad to have you on the podcast is because what I discovered through your work, through IFS, through others, is like for many years, I was kind of caught in trying to, you know, heal myself, grow, develop myself, but almost within parts, you know, so parts were trying to fix parts, and it was this self-improvement game, and it didn't work really, because there was a kind of sense of aggression, trying to fix myself. A lot of those parts underneath were feeling a sense of lack. And so it was only when I was able to shift into awake awareness or self-essence or self, as they call it in IFS, that, and then meet parts from that place, that there was a kind of love, an unconditional love that could be brought to parts that they didn't receive when, you know, when they were younger, in a sense, or when I was younger. So that was just a game changer. It's just huge. I mean, what's your experience? What do you think about that shift? Yeah.
I think that's the key shift. I mean, in some ways, there's a lot to say. And even as I listen to myself, I'm like, wow, you could go off in five different directions. But that's the main thing that, you know, I've been, you know, doing one-on-one work as a therapist and group therapy and couples therapy, which I really love to do. But I've decided to teach, and I'm doing this three-part training program to in effortless mindfulness to help people get just what you said. Like, if you can get that the smartest part of you, the kindest part of you, the most mindful part of you is a part. That's not you. So all the meditation and even the self-improvement work gets it. Well, have self-compassion. Well, who's the self that's having compassion? To whom? To which self? Most people are doing this. You know, we can find parts of us that are trying to, you know, something arises that feels shameful, and then a judging part comes. Oh, you shouldn't be feeling that. You should be feeling calm. And then you're like, oh, well, you shouldn't be judging the part. Oh, well, now you're judging the judge. Well, don't judge the judge. Oh, well, be kind. Well, find the kindness. Oh, just accept. Oh, no, I'll allow everything to be. So this whole game of self-improvement, mindfulness, of conventional mindfulness, allowing, accepting, you creating these parts that are accepting. So that's the problem. And there's a lot to say about that, but everyone and a lot of people know the problem, but the solution is what you said, Joel, which is there is this other dimension that doesn't feel like a part, that is here, that has been very hard to access because it's so subtle. But there are, and you have to kind of find the way to find it and then abide as it, or be not only be aware of it, but rest as it. And then when you're aware from it, you're not aware the difference between a mindful witness and this self with a capital S or true nature, is that it's immediately interconnected with the part that was hurt and the judging part. It sees not from above or outside, but like, oh, we're all together. Oh, we're all, oh, you're a sweet child that's, you know, angry and judgmental, and you're actually trying to help me, you know, with this other part. Oh, sweetheart, you know, I don't need to get rid of you or oppose you or change you. You're me. We're all, this is the dance. You know, it sees that. So shifting into this, which already is loving, accepting, welcoming, so you don't have to do anything, but how do you find this, which is inherent and subtle, and we don't have the operating instructions, let alone the map to find. So that's my interest, is to give these little pointers or glimpses, to give a little map. And then different people have different learning styles and different obstacles that keep them coming back, or being afraid to let go, or not knowing that they're only halfway there. So learning how to do that for yourself, and then helping others, if you're a coach or a therapist, to help others access this, which has the capacity to bear what seems to be unbearable, and actually can be with any storm that arises in the sky without being hurt.
Yeah, that's really powerful. I'm going to invite you to kind of point us to this place. Or you know, this sure. Give us a glimpse. I know you have these glimpse practices in a moment, but I just want to share that for me, one of the most powerful moves I've been making with clients is to support them, because the context is people are getting more savvy, people are learning more about who we are, you know, learning more about psychology, about spirituality, and in that process they can absorb kind of injunctions like I should accept things, you know, or be mindful, you know, or be peaceful, or what they take on spiritual parts or self-development parts and impose subtly these ideas onto their current experience. And that's been something very powerful to be able to reflect that back to people when they're actually being kind of in a subtle way aggressive towards those parts that may be activated by, you know, imposing an agenda of peace or acceptance onto them.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, just to bring in some IFS language to that, there's a great term called self-like parts. So there can be very kind, smart parts of you that are still within the sphere of this body-mind parts-based identity and isn't yet this self. So I'll just, you know, so in this kind of style of bringing together effortless mindfulness and IFS, I kind of bring them together and kind of, I've co-taught, like five different times with Dick Schwartz in Italy. We taught together at Esalen, where we were focusing on accessing self and then self to parts. So we've kind of, I've kind of focused more from discover self-leadership first, assume it's true, and then come to the parts, where he tends to start with the parts and unburden them to find self. But we both, you know, move different ways. So if you were just to feel within yourself, so to start to make that realization that, oh, I'm not one person that is having feelings, or as some psychologists, you know, I'm a person who's having negative self-talk, and negative self-talk is the problem. Well, okay, but who's it appearing to? Well, it's appearing to me, but me is a one that's trying to self-improve or be the kindest, smartest part. So if you realize, okay, well, self-talk, all those are parts. So which one are they? They're talking to each other. So let's assume they're like little sub-personalities or people within parts, and find one of them within yourself. Like you could find one that's listening right now, trying to understand. And maybe within you, it's like, I think I'm understanding. This is really great. I want to understand. Or I'm not quite getting this. I don't know. Maybe I won't get it. You know, so see if you can find one of those parts, and then find out, feel, where is it in or around your body? So if I were to find one, you know, I'd find it in the like middle of my head, behind my eyes. Does it have a shape, a boundary? And now it's like also kind of in my throat because it's wanting to express. So now it has a boundary that goes here as I'm a little clearer. Now the two moves are, can you recognize that part, thank that part for trying to help? So there immediately is, you've shifted from this ego-centered view that I'm one person having thoughts and feelings, sensations, to currently there's a lot of parts in me that have thoughts, feelings, sensations, and worldviews. And then you recognize that you can be aware of them, and usually you're aware from another part. So you can ask the part to step back, or you can ask the part if it can give you a little space. And as you get more space, you move toward, I think for most people, a mindful witness or a self-like part. Are you aware of that part now as this separate place? Yes. So my move then is, okay, can you realize that this first part that's aware is also a part, is a mindful witness, and it can even have all the eight C's. Can you, you know, of compassion, clarity, calmness. Can you ask if this part can give you some more space? And then you open up into this spacious self-essence, an awareness that isn't located in one dimension, but is also interconnected, is equally inside and out, is open. And then see, how do you feel toward both these parts? How do you feel toward the first part that was either doubting or trying hard to understand, And can you thank those parts? And then now you start to feel what you were talking about, Joel, this ultimate compassion and connection. So interconnection that feels, at least at first, a little, there can be resistant parts that are like, wait a minute, I'm like spaced out, or I'm, where am I aware from? I'm aware from everywhere. Oh, this is not normal. And so they get scared, or they'll kind of snap you back. And so it takes a little time to learn how to familiarize yourself with yourself. But this is kind of a glimpse practice that's kind of an IFS style one.
Yeah, thanks for taking us through that. I noticed the difference between the self-like part, you know, and you mentioned the eight C's, and they're from IFS, you know, they've like the eight C's of like, I don't know them all, but compassion and care. And anyway, these, there can be a part like a self-like part that has those eight C's. And I noticed the difference between that and then shifting beyond that, or out, you know, out from identifying that. And then just the real care and compassion, it has this just such a visceral interconnected feeling to it. It's completely different. And maybe we could just spend a little bit longer for people, because that was we went through that quite quickly. And actually that's what's powerful about your glimpse methods. But could you spend a little bit longer connecting us to this sense of awake awareness, or
sure,
true nature that you talk about, so we can, people listening can also just get a sense of that.
Yeah. And, you know, that's what I've found having done all styles of individual counseling and psychotherapy and coaching and teaching is, you know, there's something in just allowing people to just be how they are and not guiding them. You know, there's different styles of being more passive, more accepting, more reflective, you know, more, you know, being from the psychoanalytic where you don't say anything and you just say, tell me more about that. But there's something in coaching, I think, and in teaching, in giving some kind of map of here's what we're doing and here's how I work. And here's the map that seems to be the style of where your personal experience can then be seen through this lens. Here's a lens or a map. Yeah. So introducing this premise of there is this other dimension of our consciousness that is what has been called awakened consciousness. It's already here within everyone, and it's not made of thought. It can't be known by your ego or effort, or it's not developed or created, but it's prior to thought. It's alert, but knowing. It's equally inside and out. It's like the sky, and then it also is interconnected with all of life as kind of like the ocean. And then it appears as different forms like the earth or like matter. So in its essential form, there's a way to get to know the foundation of what's called nature of mind or self essence, which is pure consciousness or awake awareness. And this is kind of strange, because when you first step out of thinking and metacognition and self awareness, and you go to like space in the room and then become aware of the awareness that's aware of space, but there's no content, it seems like, oh, wait a minute, that's nothing. Oh, wait a minute, that's a gap. Now, am I doing it right? And as soon as you go to Am I doing it right? You go check, then you're out of it. So it's getting this feeling, and it's a feeling that we go to. Most of us do the fun things we do in our free time in order to experience this kind of awake, loving flow in some way. So people, when they're not doing their work tasks, although many people find it in their work, you go dance or walk in nature, play with animals, garden, play sports, play music, listen to music. So when you do that, you drop out of your self-referencing and you go into these qualities of flow that are described by Csikszentmihalyi in his research, which are you're no longer in your ego. You're not referencing thought. There's a feeling that if you're doing an activity that you kind of know basically how to do, you're now doing it from a kind of immediate trusting place. There's a feeling of bliss or ecstasy in the activity itself, in just being and doing rather than what it is. And there's a sense that time, you're in the now, time opens up. So awake awareness. So many people, I'll do a meditation where I'll say, okay, this one's called the memory door. Let me describe what awake awareness and this non-dual presence and this awake loving flow is. Do you, have you ever experienced it? Yes, in a peak experience or in your regular free time? Yes. Okay, now go remember it. And now be it. And now let go of the qualities and the visual experience and now just be here. So the key is to feel without focused on an activity or a person or a thing. Is this which you find in the thing you love or have found in your peak experiences? Is that actually related to the person, place, thing, or time or event? Or is that actually a doorway that you can find now to open to your essential awake being? So the feeling is kind of, as I said before, that almost like we're living in this cloud of physical body, mental, energetic, pain, pleasure, emotions, anxiety, energy, anxiety, depression, parts of us. Oh, I should do that. What are you doing? Oh, what time is it? I don't know. I better get going. And we try to fix the cloud and clean it up. And so the premise is there's a subtler dimension that's not a part, that's not a thought, that's not a physical sensation, that actually is not in pain, has never been in pain. It's not sleepy. It's shame-free, and it's here, and it's alert and knowing just by being. And then that is when that becomes 51% primary, it can welcome and include everything else. So let me do this short little glimpse, and I'll do a couple, but here's one. So if this premise is that the primary obstacle is this current identity or manager, ego manager, that's trying to keep us safe by, you know, surviving and thriving, by monitoring, looking for danger outside and inside. Is there pain out here? Is there potential pain out there? Does this pain mean I need to do something? So it's kind of trying to solve a problem outside, inside. If that problem solver, as a part of us, can just relax or step back, then could it be that this awake consciousness is here? that isn't trying to make anything better, not trying to get anything, not trying to push anything away, just in the now here. So here's the simple inquiry, and you can try this for yourself. So the inquiry is to understand the inquiry with your mind and your language, and then look with awareness. So the inquiry is, what's here now when there's no problem to solve? So when there's no problem and the problem solver softens back, what's here that's aware and alert, that's not based in thought? What's it like? Now just be aware of this that's here when the problem solver relaxes. And then just for a moment, notice any parts that come in, like what's going on? Just welcome them or ask them to soften back. And again, what's here when they don't even have any problem to solve? What's this non-thought, wordless awareness, spacious and pervasive? What's this like? And what's it like to be aware of it? And then what's it like to rest as this? Awake awareness. Just for a moment, just to familiarize. And there may be other activity kind of pulling you back because it's unfamiliar, but just familiarizing. What's it like to be aware of it? What's it like to rest as it? And then what's the relationship resting as this if it then begins to arise as vibration, movement, energy, sensation, thought, feeling, your body, and the room? If you're aware from the self, what you're feeling now, moving from kind of a neutrality, feeling toward your body and toward any parts that are arising, and even toward that problem solver. What's the feeling from here toward the problem solver that was trying to help? Can you see that the problem solver is not you, but is a part of you? And can you feel the completely unique dimension of the view and the sense of you and the non-thought-based clarity that is primary and includes everything? It's just take a little deeper breath and let out a sigh. Huh. No big deal. So just notice what that shift is like, that series of letting go of that small manager, opening, resting, including, and then relating and connecting to this, from this self-essence to the self-energy to this self-leadership, which is now you can talk, begin to talk and walk, create and relate through your eyes open, so you don't have to sit. And you can do this kind of thing in the middle of your day instead of a coffee break or a look out the window and kind of return home. So.
Beautiful. Thank you, Locke. Yeah. Yeah. I can just feel my, you know, what pervades my experience as you guide us into this. And I wonder, asking you from here, what's your experience living in life like this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty amazing. So, I kind of, my wife says, you know, I look over at you and you're smiling while you're sleeping, you know. It's like, so there's a kind of a, almost like an open-eyed, it's like parts will come up and thoughts will come up, and there'll be like a meeting of them as they start dancing into my life in the morning, and then I'll consciously roll over and kind of meet them, welcome them, and glimpse, and kind of start to return home and make that transition from sleep to kind of liminal parts that, you know, coming up, and what are we going to do today, and then to self, and then get up in self and in leadership. So I had had some long COVID for a little over a year, and so it gave me an opportunity to work with pain and weakness. I felt like I was 105. My nerve endings wouldn't fire my legs in the morning, and I'd have brain fog. And then I realized when I had brain fog, and I was like, okay, I got brain fog. I don't even know what I'm going to teach today. I'm going to this whole thing, and let me look at my notes. And I put the notes down. And I was like, what was that again? That I was, what is the subject even? And then I just said, okay, we'll shift into self leadership and trust that it's all here in this flow. And then I just start talking, and everything was input, because that's what happens in flow. All the information you've learned, all the language, it's just a matter of who's using it. And then I trust it, and all of a sudden, you know, I can talk and walk and create from this other operating system while still having brain fog.
I'd love to ask you, thanks for sharing. It's really insightful to kind of get a sense of how this lives in you. And I'd like to talk about the how awake awareness and who we are relate to each other. This is where it gets a little bit more nuanced in terms of the language for me. But maybe if I just share, you know, there's different views on waking up, and you know, I've explored some paths where it feels like it's kind of like the invitation is there's just consciousness, or you know, you wake up as awareness, and that's all there is, you know, in a sense. And my own relationship with this idea of emptiness in Buddhism has been, you know, mixed. I found. And it's interesting because you were saying, like, no thought. I can't remember. It's not thoughts. It's not sensations. So that points to how it's important to kind of, in a sense, like, set, you know, as an initial step, recognize awareness. But it feels like some paths kind of stop there, and
Yes.
it's like the world isn't real, you know, or
That's right.
you know, and then and in some way, you know, and we talk about no self. I don't know if I like that idea, you know. I mean, I like being Joel and a self, you know. It's like I
Yeah.
really, in a way, so I really want to be me, you know.
Yes,
Like
that's it.
I really. So I'm interested in what is it to be fully human and functioning
Yes.
and loving and enjoying life. And so what is this relationship between awareness and all of that? And yeah.
Yeah, so that's beautiful, because that's exactly my feeling too, and that's what feels the most real and the most full to me. So I have kind of a map. You know, I had done a lot of sitting meditation, 10-day retreats, 21-day retreats. I went to Sri Lanka for did 9 months of long retreats and study. And then I had gone up to meet this teacher in Nepal, Tulku Urgyen Rinpoche, and within 10 minutes, he did this 10-minute pointing out instruction that's similar to the glimpses that I'm doing. And all of a sudden, I was not only in awake awareness, but I was in these next stages. So the awake awareness is only, to me, some as you say, there's some philosophies and trainings that say, you know, stop that. Who I am is the pure consciousness or awareness. Everything else is a movie or unreal. Just be this awareness. To me, that's halfway there. The next stage is that this awareness that Buddhism, non-dual means the awake awareness and the aliveness are not two. The ultimate reality and the relative reality are two truths. They're the same. They're both and. So it's not, so it's almost like if you're in materialism and you go to pure awareness, that's a new dualism. Because what is this? That's a movie. Well then that's two. So what are we doing with that? So when they're the same, so it feels like what's called same taste is the fourth. So the first level is everyday mind, where you just take yourself to be a creature, body, mind. Second level is subtle mind and subtle body, which is a lot of practices we do with psychology and qigong and chanting and some kinds of yoga. You try to get out of your body into a subtler, you know, even taking a sauna and a bath, you're kind of getting out into a subtle energy, and a lot of even, you know, initial meditation practice, calming the body and the mind. That's the second level. And a lot of meditation psychology go just those two levels. The third level is this recognizing that you can step out of conditioning into this unconditioned awareness, that's the primary, that's the nature of mind. But then the fourth level is same taste or non-dual presence or unity mind or interbeing is what Thich Nhat Hanh, so that the interconnection of awareness and aliveness, with awareness being primary, so you don't have to come back and create the ego manager as the central character, that now you feel like, oh, the awareness based the self within all the parts is the true nature, that is where I can speak for a part rather than from a part. So there's an awareness that loves all the parts. And so that sense of well-being or self-embodiment. And then the fifth stage is awake loving flow. So that means now that you are this, you start having to almost kind of learn this next stage of focusing, effortlessly focusing from this field of awareness, where if you're not focusing, so you're no longer using attention as the primary way of trying to focus on your work. You're actually in this field of awareness that is embodied and interconnected. So you literally are focusing from a feeling of awake, embodied flow, like you would be if you were in the zone or in the flow. And you can focus effortlessly without, so if your mind wanders, it doesn't even matter because you're not focusing from your mind. And you start to feel this love, this that the fabric of reality is love, meaning safety, meaning there's nothing that can threaten you. So this is where the emptiness comes in, because emptiness means interdependence. So emptiness means that there's no such, it's empty of a separate thing. There's no separate thing called me, like a tree. So if a tree, the metaphor is, there's no such thing as a tree that's a separate thing, because a tree is not a tree without water, earth, sun. So there's no separate self. It's this interdependent or interconnected, interbeing consciousness that's arising as this unique person that is a wave in the ocean of consciousness, so that then you're free to have this full life. And but then it's important to do the psychological work too, that not only wake up, but as Ken Wilber says, you wake up and grow up and, you know, clean up and show up and a lot of other ups, but that you don't stop at the first awakening, because that's where a lot of teachers who have had that initial awakening and don't do the psychological work have ended up acting out. So the integrity and the responsibility comes from coming into the heart and working with any parts that start to either, you know, kind of spiritually bypass or psychologically underpass, repress everything, or intellectually overpass.
What's the intellectual overpass?
Yeah. So I have these four. So, you know, many people have heard about this spiritual bypass, which John Wellwood coined, as which is what you describe, which is basically waking up from the sense of an ego identity or small self to this pure awareness, and now I'm just pure awareness, or a mindful witness, or choiceless awareness. Everything else is a dream or illusion, and so I don't need to show up or do anything or be responsible. It's all lila, it's all play. So whatever happens is just the way things are unfolding. There's no personal will or any, so that's a spiritual bypass, which many people know. So then I talk about the psychological underpass, which is you just do psychological work and keep within this body mind, keep doing subtle body, subtle mind, cleaning up, self-improvement, and you never find the self. You never find your true nature. So you're underpassing, but you're not discovering the essential dimension of who am I. And then the intellectual overpass is you kind of get first insights or kind of initial awakening, and then you're like, good, I got it, I'm done, I'm awake, I'm, and you create kind of a spiritual ego, or you kind of take ideas of initial awakening, or you stay in like studying about it, or getting one idea and making it into like a teaching that is all about the theory. And then there's the meditative cul-de-sac, where you go with a map that's incomplete or different, you know, or shorter, or you stop at a stage of awakening, like you wake up from the knowing to the not knowing, and then you stay in this gap of the void or no self, and you become a couch potato, a lot of people, or you get, as you say, you go to the stop at pure awareness, and then you're like, there's nobody here named John. There's just, you know, things that happen. I go to the grocery store, people have come to me and said, you know, I go to the grocery store, things end up in my cart, and I ask him, like, are they all cat food, or there tend to be things you like? And then they say, but my partner says she thinks I'm dissociated. What do you think? And I'm like, I think your partner's right. Yeah. Because <Cool. laughs> sometimes I've cut to the chase, but the main thing is that this, you know, if you have this map that is misunderstanding what emptiness is or what the goal is. So the sense is that it is this embodied, open-hearted, open-eyed, relational dance that is never, you're never awake or not awake. You're always awake and always unfolding.
So this is really great. And you talked about the gap and the void, and I'll bring in a bit of my story. I've shared it before, but I experienced, I think, you know, entering into that gap and the void, and it was a very challenging place to be. And actually I discovered online, there was like this whole community of people who, you know, even from Sam Harris's waking up app, you know, have experienced a lot of difficulties and challenges of accessing this kind of like no self experience. And then I discovered that there was lots of people who kind of like moved on from that, you know, in a sense we're like coming back to a sense of self, you know, and enjoyment in the world, and just even rejecting, kind of, they're rejecting spirituality. But what happened in, I mean, if I make it practical on my own experiences, like I suddenly was less interested in kind of sitting there and shifting into, you know, spacious awareness, which I'd done so much of. And it actually became more about like fully being here in the world, you know, and there was actually this kind of, and I'm curious what you, I'm sharing this because I'm curious what you think about it. It became more about like, there was this kind of like energetic feeling of just being fully here in my body. And as opposed to what would sometimes feel like a kind of dissociated, spaced out like feeling, or, you know, as we said in the check-in in the beginning, like this feeling of like the void being more real than reality, which wasn't enjoyable. Right. And so what I did notice was there was then this journey where it felt like my body really opened up. And, you know, even right now, as we're speaking, I can just feel this just kind of like yumminess. Like I called it to my wife, I was like, the yum is here, you know, because there'd just be this like embodied well-being,
yes,
unconditional well-being in my heart or in my belly. And I was like, this is like way more enjoyable than trying to remain in some kind of spacious awareness. Now, I'm not saying anything about my realization or about what's like valid on the path, but, you know, I just was like, I just want to feel good, you know, like I don't even know what full awakening is actually, but I know I really just want to feel happy, feel good, feel functional, loving, fully here.
Yeah. I mean that, so that is my interest too, having, you know, started and looked and kind of looked at the different, and practiced, you know, different traditions and listened to what is, you know, what are you calling awakening? Where's the map? How far does it go? Where does it stop? How is it different than others? And so, you know, this kind of Mahamudra map, I felt was the strongest fullness. And it does go all the way, you know, from the pure awareness. And then it does say, no, but that's, the next is called same taste. And so same taste, you get this, the unity of emptiness and bliss. So that's the yummy. So literally you feel this bliss body, and bliss isn't like, you know, small, you know, like bliss of, you know, sex or ice cream or relative level bliss. It's as if you took that bliss and you spread it out thin, and as if it was the fabric. So it's really the relief of suffering and the subtle body, they call it Sambhogakaya. So from, I'll just throw these words, Nirmanakaya is the pure awareness. Then there's Sambhogakaya, which is the unity of awareness and aliveness and consciousness. And then there's Nirmanakaya, which is everyday life.
And is it Dharmakaya? I think you said Nirmanakaya. So Dharmakaya is the
Dharmakaya
open awareness.
Is the pure awareness, is Rigpa. And then Sambhogakaya is the unity, what I call self-embodiment, the same taste. And then Nirmanakaya is living it in the midst of the world, so which I call awake, loving flow. So that's where I think the IFS comes in as well, because even then, when you feel that yumminess, same taste, Sambhogakaya, and then you're in Nirmanakaya, now you're going to have old trauma coming up, and you're going to have parts that, even though you're aware from true nature or self, and you're embodied, you still have to clean house. You know, there's still stuff that has to detox and be unburdened. So that's why IFS, you know, you have this small self, you go to, you know, ask for some space, you know, in my map, I go to self essence, which is awake awareness. Then I come back to self energy, which is the same taste. And then you didn't get rid of the self. There's no self. There's, even if you don't want to use true self, if you want to use nature of mind, you still have a part called an ego function or a manager that's part of the team. So that guy who thought he was the center is not killed or gotten rid of or seen as an illusion. He's just like, he's just been working too hard and now he's semi-retired. And he's like, oh, geez, I thought I was driving the car. It's a self-driving vehicle. So, you know, so he's a kid in the seat, you know, thinking he's driving. And he's like, you weren't driving even then. So, but now this ego isn't nobody or nothing. It's actually like sweetheart. It's like, oh, you're a young kind of kid, like a parentified child that's been trying its best to live this life. It's okay, sweetheart, you can go play. And I need your help to like, remember where I live and what's my phone number. And, you know, you've learned some great work functions. And so, but you have self within you and I'm with you. I'm the leader. I'm the caring, leader of the team. You can be one, a player on the team, and we need you. Thank you so much. So that's like radical. So that's like, okay, and I'm bumbling along and I have these parts that like have agendas and I'm talking to my wife. Yeah, but what about this? And I think this is that. And what, you know, and then I'm like, oh, there's a part with an agenda that just like came up and has an opinion like, this is right because of this or that. And it's like, whoa, there you go. Okay, so just be aware of that part. And then step back and go like, okay. So there's a part of me that feels that this thing that the guy did, you know, when he came and was going to fix, you know, and then he didn't do it, it makes me feel hurt or ignored. It makes me feel ignored. And then I feel protective of you and me. And, you know, then I can see the whole parts-based system come up to whom? To this, what we started with, which is really the main essential thing. The parts work is parts work. It's actually in every other, it's not just IFS. There's Gestalt, there's psychosynthesis, there's Jungian personas. It's not that there's an elegant system that Dick has simplified into, Dick Schwartz into the IFS. But it, if you get to self or true nature and then come back, that's the key. Not if you, once you do this, what you're talking about, Joel, is the going from thought-based, I think, therefore I am, to initial waking up to not knowing. But then if you let go and you don't know that there is an awake awareness that's friendly, that is returning home, that is the nature of mind, and you just go to no self, then there's a part that can get scared in kind of the night sky. I don't know where I am. I'm not sure this is okay. There's nothing happening. And it darkens that. And you can get caught in that. Or some people get caught in this kind of couch potato, or they get caught in, I'm going to meditate more to try to fix it or try to get out. But if you just recognize there is this, that the awareness is returning home, and then come back and include everything and just do it in these small glimpses many times, attitude rather than long adjusting, trying. But noticing that there's a part that's often afraid in the void.
Yeah, that's helpful. Because what I realized as well was there's actually quite a difference between a kind of spaced out, void-like experience, which is intermingled with the trauma, you know, the part mm-hmm. that's afraid, and actually this kind of vivid coalescing awake awareness, which is just very vivid and here and mm-hmm. and intimate, and it doesn't feel spaced out, and it I think in some ways maybe my meditation practice got too caught on the notion, on imposing subtle notions of space, even,
Yes, yes.
So spaciousness can in the beginning be a very helpful pointer, but actually, if you're not careful, you're actually kind of like imposing, I mean, I speak for myself, like imposing spaciness on experience. And I wonder,
And just to say that is a map that I think, I mean, I had a time, I'm not, I'm still seeing some people individually, but there was a time where like a whole lot of people, they just came with that. Like I've been told this is, this is where I'm supposed to go. And it's really not satisfying. It's almost either scary or dissociated. And so it's only halfway of the map. It's not non-dual. It's been called non-dual awareness, but it's non-dual awareness, meaning it's half of non-dual. The awareness then needs to come back to the aliveness to be non-dual, to be not two. They gotta be. You call that non-dual awareness. If you call this non-dual humanness, then you have non-dual presence, or that is both and the emptiness and form. Form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. That
And
both are needed.
because this is again, I'm kind of being very self-indulgent here about my own journey, but the beauty of being human, I think this is also when you talk, you I felt like that was me, when I went into that place and I was like, this isn't very satisfying, and then I remember like being with someone who was sharing a really difficult experience, and I was so touched by their humanity, and my heart was just so tenderized, and I was like, this is what I want to experience, like it just felt so good to feel that sense of being touched by life, and so. I sit with this, and this is why I'm curious what you'll say. It's like there's a huge, it's so huge when you start to recognize parts, yeah? When you go like, oh my God, I thought that was me. I thought these parts were me, and but and they've got a good intention, but they have this agenda, and then you learn to shift out of them, and then, but then also, and this is what I want to ask you is like. That actually, as self, I can also be deeply moved and in tears and feel grief and feel even anger, these emotions that are often labeled, anger in Buddhism, in certain school, the Buddhism is, kind of really frowned upon. And I actually like feeling those emotions as a human being, and that can feel very different though than being in a part that feels anger or grief. I'm just curious what you make of what I'm sharing, and yeah.
I mean, certainly that recognize, that kind of awakening to being, to the view of being, I'm not one person having emotions. There are different parts of me. I do feel like there's, certainly starting with compassion, and like you're talking about, almost that tender-hearted, sweet sadness towards somebody, like you were describing, like, oh my God, this person's really hurting. And then that is an essential feeling. So that's not, there are parts that are empathizing, but there's also kind of this compassion, which is different than empathy, which is the same as this person. Like they're a part of the big you,
Right.
not of you the person, but the you that's bigger than myself, that they're also interbeing. The interbeing, we're both parts within that interbeing, so that you're having compassion toward a part of you, which is you, which is another person. So there are essential feelings. And so all the feelings can have essential. There can be outrage, you know, like, oh my God, you know, I can't believe that's happening, or somebody's doing that, or what in the world? And then you can get curious from there about whether it's actually some burden to that then grabs it, you know, the essential feelings like anger or outrage, or that is, you know, coming from a part that was hurt, that has a protector. That's so I always go to, if I feel an emotion, I'm always like something like anger, I'm always let it arise and then wonder curiously, well, what's the hurt behind it, or what's the feeling of shame or exile, or what's the connection to some other, like, I'm not getting rid of you. You thank you for your good work, and who are you protecting? You know, who's what's the view that you're upset about? Because there's some other things that were similar. You weren't upset. I wasn't angry. I wasn't angry. Wasn't angry. Then all of a sudden I'm angry, and I'm like, that's similar to that, but now I'm angry. But then there's some essential things that are outrageous, that are just like, because they're mainly because they're kind of uncompassionate.
Right.
You know, those are kind of the natural, you know, protective, like, you know, you'd protect, you see somebody getting hurt, you know, somebody's hurting a child, and you just immediately, you know, you're outraged in your action. And, you know, so that's a normal, that's a fully human emotion. There's nothing wrong with the emotion. And usually they'll arise naturally, and then be, you know, this talks about, you know, they liberate on their own. They untie as they go along. They liberate upon arising, or they untie themselves when the time is done. It's almost like standing at the corner of a street and a car comes by and it honks a horn and you jump. You know, you're gonna, that's a normal reaction. And then that could trigger you, like, oh my God, that person, and I hate this, and I don't. Or it could be like, oh, that's what that was. Okay, there it goes. And now, you know, now it's a normal feeling, and now it's, or it can lead to some action. You know, okay, so what am I going to do? Because I feel outraged about this situation, or I want to take a small action, and it can lead to compassionate activity.
Yeah, and in the end, like, not to reject our experience,
Right. Yes.
and even the liberation in, like, not needing to be anywhere, like, not needing to not feel pain, not needing to be in a spiritual state. Just a, you know, there's a kind of dropping into just the sacredness of everything that arises, you know.
Yeah, and that's the, you know, that's the movement, Joel, from what you're talking about, which is that first stage of recognizing self-essence or awake awareness, or stepping out of conditioning to coming back to same taste, is that everything is made of awake consciousness. Like, there's not two things going on. Like, so everything's sacred, because it's all yin and yang. It's not, there's not bad and good, that there's, you know, pleasant and unpleasant with relatively, but even the unpleasant may be a pain signal that is important, or a heartbreak that, or grief that is the most touching love that you ever felt. For me, I know that's happened, where I felt this grief when I saw somebody who had passed away and went to a funeral, and I just started crying. Everyone was very stiff, and I walked in, and they were all very formal, and it had been a young person, tragic, sudden thing, and I walked in and I just looked at him, and it was like, oh, he's so beautiful. Like, I just saw his whole life, and I just started crying and weeping and kind of laughing and talking like to my wife, and then everyone else started to kind of come over and comfort me, and then they started crying and laughing and kind of talking to each other. But it was almost like the grief allowed, but it just kind of sprung forth as like, it was like crying, but I was like, this is the most beautiful person. What a gift that I knew them, you know, like, and it just all came together in a kind of a beautiful aliveness, which is the goal. But I think, Joel, you know, if I may reflect, I think you're going to the awake awareness and discovering that kind of self that does have compassion. And then even though part of you kept trying to think, well, I should just go do more awareness, it started mixing with you. So you started having yumminess as the natural next stage, even though you may not have known, like, oh, this is where it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's starting to land a bit more through our conversation. You know, I'm aware I'm going to thank you in a moment, but I'm aware that at some point I just felt like, yeah, I've done enough, like, in inverted commas, like emptiness meditation. And in particular, the kind of more analytical emptiness injunctions that can be made. And I was like, ah, you know. And I think what sealed the deal for me was I was reading Arnim Thubten's books. He's cool. Yeah. He was writing about, he has one on the fragrance of emptiness. And because I was like, you know, excuse me, I was like, fucking empty. I want to get to the bottom of this emptiness thing, you know, like, because, you know, they say it's not don't go down the nihilistic path. Right. But I was like, I can't help it. It just keeps taking me there. Yeah. So but one of the things that liberated me was he was, in this book, Arnim Thubten was saying, you can over apply it, you know? And he was like, yeah, even Nagarjuna, like the famous Indian kind of, you know, emptiness kind of philosopher, said it's actually better to be more of an eternalist than a nihilist, you know? So yeah. Those are technical terms, but, like, you know, Buddhists don't like eternalism because, you know, that's like God really exists as some independently. They don't like that. They don't like nihilism. But even Nagarjuna is like, yeah, if you're going to choose nihilism or eternalism, you're better off going down the eternalist path. And I was like, cool. And then Arnim Thubten just said, you know, there was one line in his book where he said something like, you know, at the end of the day, you just got to live your life too. You know, no. It's like you can't get too immersed in the empty. And I was like, even he said, like, just forget it, you know. It's done its thing, you know.
Yeah. Because it really is. I mean, there's kind of three levels of emptiness, but the first one is just to get the solidity. It's really about that.
The first level
is just breaks up the solidity of I'm somebody who literally, it's almost like, it's not even that I'm a body mind. It's that this little mini me in my head thinks it's real and this body is its vehicle. It thinks it's a person, that I'm this person that's going to die. And by, you know, even like if something happens to my thoughts or somebody says something bad about me, no, wait a minute, that's only thoughts. Like that's there's no solid self, that's empty. Then the next emptiness is the kind of the nature of mind is contentless. But then the third emptiness is interdependence, which means there's no separate one thing of your body, there's interbeing, that everything's empty means emptiness and appearance are not two. Right. So that emptiness means everything's interconnected or interdependent or interbeing. That's empty. So emptiness, or you could say emptiness joins with, they say the unity of emptiness and bliss, the unity of emptiness and appearance. So that's the coming back from the stepping out of the ignorance of separateness. So ultimately, it's about getting out of the separateness. So even if you're void and you're separate, or you're a pure awareness and you're separate, it's the interdependence that makes for the full human life. And it's a real thing. And it's something that I think is learnable, trainable, doesn't require, its unfolding is a lifetime, but the essential learning of it and getting the map and getting the glimpses of each mini stage within a glimpse practice, then the Tibetan word for meditation, gom, is often translated as familiarize. So you're just familiarizing yourself with your fullness of this awakeness, and then you have the capacity to be with the traumatized parts and the hopes and fears, and you're not driven by, self-improvement or manifestation, as if you have to, if I manifest this and get this someday, I'll be okay. It's like, you're okay. And you can do whatever you want. You can do stuff and achieve stuff and do it well and have fun, but it's not, there's no self that's improved. It's already find the one that needs no improvement, that's innocent. That's the key. Find that, and then notice that that has this kind of joy. You asked about what is it like. I kind of wake up sometimes like a kid on summer vacation, like, oh, this is great. What are we going to do today? Some other boring stuff like we did yesterday? Yeah, today's like a lot of boring stuff. I got to do all these respond to those emails. Okay, let's go. It's like, but it isn't about the thing. It's like, I'm alive.
Yeah, beautiful. Hey, well, look, Locke, just thank you for indulging me today. I feel like I really, maybe took us into some weeds, but I this was a really fantastic conversation. And I just want to say, look, thank you for your work, by the way. Your books and your glimpse practices had a huge impact on me. And, in a sense, were like one of the most important first ways I started to really open into that space. Because it's written a lot about in Buddhism, but they were so impactful. And so thank you for that. And
thank you. You're so welcome, man. That's very touching. Yeah.
Well, and just to say, we need, I think right now, is these kinds of shifts are so important. At least if you care about your own path of healing as well, then what we've talked about is such an important enabler of that kind of path of integration and healing as well. So thank you for a great conversation. Where can we find out more about your work? And just say you'll be teaching in the Symphony of Self as well on kind of topics we've been exploring today. And where can we find out more about what you're up to?
Yeah, so you certainly can just go to my website, which is lockkelly.org, LOCHKELLY. .org, and I have this training program, which actually has a certification for learning how to for a facilitator that you can add to coaching, or as a therapist, or as a meditation teacher, or as somebody that's a facilitator. And I also have, people might be interested in an app that I have called Mindful Glimpses, which gives you access to both, kind of take you through an intro series, and then there's different glimpses for different learning styles, including some video ones where I kind of move my hands and open up and have you follow things. So you can check that out. And look forward to also some live retreats in Costa Rica and Canada, and hope to come to Europe soon as well.
Thanks for tuning into the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it.
And a reminder that the early bird enrollment is now open for our upcoming live training with Jim Dethmer and Bob Anderson. It's called Unlocking Leaders, and it's going to teach you how to coach at the level of consciousness, which is, for me, the highest leverage move you can make as a coach. Your client's consciousness is the place where the deepest, truest transformational breakthroughs come from. And often traditional coaching misses this. And it's something that our clients need us to learn as coaches, because our times are calling for something deeper. We've got to go beneath the content of our experience, beneath strategy, to the source of change. And that's exactly what Unlocking Leaders is designed to teach you. I'm so proud of this program, of what it's become. I feel it's our offering in these times. And if you're ready to answer the call of these times, then you can join the full program. So just head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. And remember, you can get the early bird discount if you join by 29th of May. Here we are. We're at the end of the podcast. Just a heads up again, if you're not on our mailing list and you want to stay in the loop about other things we create, then head to coachesrising.com, put your name in the sign-up box there. You'll also find some of our other offerings, our online trainings for coaches there. And just want to end by wishing you well, and I'll see you again next time.